From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM later on tonight. Those open lines. Here's what's happening. Job growth in January shattered expectations, with non-farm payroll surging by 304,000 people, despite a partial government shutdown that, of course, was the longest in history. Let's hope it doesn't happen again. But General Motors on Monday morning will start a weeks-long process of laying off close to 4,000 of its salaried employees in North America. GM is expected to complete its plans to cut 15% of its salaried workforce by the end of this month. Prior to announcing its workforce reduction plans, however, it offered a voluntary buyout to more than 17,000 employees with more than 12 years of experience. Young children are apparently using too much toothpaste, from the CDC, according to a study. The CDC surveyed the parents of caregivers of 5,100 children ages 3 to 15, and they were asked a series of questions like how much toothpaste their child used and how many times a day their child brushed their teeth. By the end, the health agency concluded that nearly 40% of children ages 3 to 6 used a brush that was full or half full of toothpaste, meaning it exceeded the CDC's recommendation of using only a pea-sized amount during those ages. Children younger than 3 should use even less, just a smear, they said, because, well, it could be a problem. A new report estimates that nearly half of all U.S. adults have some form of heart or blood vessel disease, a medical milestone that mostly due to recent guidelines that expanded how many people have high blood pressure. Let's check in with Christian Wild, author of MyHeartBook.com, of course, in the Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke. Christian, that's kind of alarming, so many people with these heart issues.
Yes, and we've been hearing about it all our lives. We live in fear of it. We don't want to face it sometimes, and here we are, George, February, Heart Month, to remind us not to take for granted the tremendous job this little muscle in our chest does to keep us around to watch yet another Tom Brady Super Bowl.
Well, that's exactly right. Or Los Angeles Rams, depending on who you're rooting for here.
True.
Right?
It's just that Brady is going to break a record here for the times at the Bowl.
He sure is.
Did you know, George, that our hearts, at 75 beats per minute, at 108,000 times a day, and we...
That's amazing.
Yeah, and if we used an average of 80 times a minute, our hearts beat about 42 million times in any given year. And if that isn't incredible in itself, try 3 billion times in our lifetime. We depend upon our hearts to perform faithfully, in spite of how little we take care of it and how much we abuse it through illicit drugs, lack of exercise, elevated high blood pressure, and improper diet. What an awesome responsibility we place on it.
If you want to know more about taking care of your heart, go to Christian's website, myheartbook.com. He's got some amazing things there for you. Christian, thank you so much. Well, a meteorite apparently hit western Cuba Friday afternoon. According to eyewitnesses, the event sounds like it was pretty dramatic, receiving reports that a meteor was seen in the skies across the Florida Keys. No reports of damage. What else is in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, George, and that's an interesting report about that meteor. I haven't heard about it or received any reports.
No calls. Okay.
I have a few other interesting ones to report to the Coast audience tonight. We've all heard about that intercept back in, I think it was 2014, by the Navy pilot David Fraser of the tic-tac-shaped object. Well, my first report is very similar to that, George, and it comes from April of 1973. A gentleman writes that he saw an object. He estimated it was about 1,500 feet from him. This is in Rockland, Massachusetts, south of Boston. He estimates it was 4 fingers width, with his fingers held at arm's length, so a very sizable object. It moved around the sky a little bit, and he reports that as it moved to the right, one end of it turned red and the other end turned green, and vice versa. When it was hovering motionless, the ends of it were purple in color. Very interesting sighting. And as he was watching it, two U.S. Marine Corps Phantom jets, he presumes they had been launched from Weymouth South Naval Air Station, intercepted it, and the object suddenly accelerated dramatically and just left them in its wake. Very interesting report. We'll have that posted to our website tomorrow. The next report comes from a little more recent. This is Tuesday night, 7:40 p.m., the 29th of January, so just three nights ago. A gentleman writes that he was in Twin Falls, Idaho, returning from a private tutoring session when he saw two solid orange lights moving across the sky in unwavering formation. He said they were far enough away from one another in the night sky that he was sure they were not connected to one object, or certainly not an aircraft, and they just moved across the sky casually at first. They suddenly accelerated and disappeared in the night sky. He saw them for about 10 to 20 seconds, he estimates. Next report comes from Hazel Township, Pennsylvania, northwest of Philly. Male, actually two observers, one of whom was a male who wrote the report, reports that he saw six or seven green-colored lights in a straight line hovering in the night sky, in the northern sky. And here's where it gets interesting, George. Okay. As he was watching them, or as they were watching them, they saw white-colored lights move from the apparently ground level up and merge with these green objects. How many times have I reported green objects over recent reports? Several times. And this guy reports that as they were watching them, they saw a green meteor streak up to them or in the general vicinity in the night sky. We'll never know what those objects were, but a very, very intriguing report. Next report comes from Kenilworth, New Jersey, the 30th of January, just three nights ago, 5:30 in the morning on Wednesday morning. Gentleman was out looking at Jupiter and the Moon and Venus, and directly overhead, he saw two stars that captured his attention. He couldn't recognize them at first. Apparently, he's a seasoned sky watcher. And suddenly, one of them started doing figure-eight maneuvers around the other. Suddenly, the object doing the figure-eight maneuvers just shot off into the morning sky and disappeared from his view.
Wow.
Next report comes from Baltimore. Gentleman saw three distinct solid white lights moving to the northeast. Haven't been able to check to see whether they might have been the Chinese naval surveillance satellites. They have launched three satellites that travel in formation for naval surveillance purposes, but an interesting report nevertheless. Next report, and the second to last one, comes from just last night, or yesterday morning, actually, Thursday morning. Gentlemen saw a blue light over Seattle. It was in the western sky from his vantage point over Magnolia, started moving to the east, and it suddenly accelerated dramatically and just streaked off in the morning sky. And the final report comes from none other than Hollywood. A regular Coast listener was kind enough to report a sighting of a very peculiar object. And he wrote a wonderful, wonderful report. He had the common sense to do a little investigation, and he discovered that what he had seen was probably a drone at a drone exhibition in eastern Hollywood. So he did everything exactly correct, and I'd like to compliment him publicly on a wonderful job he did. Coast listeners make for wonderful observers, wonderful witnesses, and he He did a wonderful job of reporting it and correcting his report.
They're the best. Peter, I'm going to see you March 23rd in Everett, Washington.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm anticipating it with great excitement, George.
Well, we're going to have a great time there. Peter will be one of our live stage guests. I'll tell you a little bit about that tonight here on Coast to Coast AM. Up next, they're back at it, The Haunted Housewives, their latest work, Love Beyond the Grave. And they're next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. The Haunted Housewives back with us. Kathy Weber, Teresa Argy. They're often considered the world's most unusual paranormal investigators. Wives, mothers, authors, and ghost hunters. The ladies balance their family lives with their paranormal pursuits. They call themselves para-historians. They've dedicated their lives to historic preservation and community service as well. They've written America's Most Haunted, Haunted Willoughby, Ohio, of course, and the latest work, Love Beyond the Grave. Let's introduce Kathy and Teresa back here on Coast to Coast. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, George. It's good to hear from you.
Looking forward to this. And Teresa, welcome back.
Thanks, George. It's great to be back on the show.
This is fun. Love Beyond the Grave. That tells me something, Teresa. There's got to be some kind of connection there, huh?
Oh, there is. Our new book was based on stories that we heard, ghost stories, because, of course, we love the ghost stories, but we found a common theme in many of them, and that theme was love. And so after doing some research, Kathy and I came up with some of the world's most astounding love stories that also have a haunting attached to them. And so it was a real fun book to research, and we've got love in every form covered in this book, because love is not always romantic and flowers and chocolate. Sometimes it can be dark and a little deadly even.
Kathy, how did you and Teresa come across these stories?
Well, of course, we both love, like many people, and I think the romance behind love catches your attention. But then Teresa and I truly are researchers and historians, and we just started looking into some of these. Some of them are obscure, and some of them are well-known love stories, to find out where this ghost might have come from. And the stories were so compelling, reading a lot like true crime most of the time. So the stories are sometimes morbid, sometimes they're cute, sometimes they're murderous, sometimes it reads like a mystery and a love story and a ghost story all in one.
Is the love so strong that it can literally pull that ghost from the other side back here?
That's something that we both feel is one of the reasons that these stories stay through the years, is the love was so strong, either because of the horrible thing that happened at the end, or the sad romantic thing that happened at the end, or the unrequited love that kept someone's heart yearning for someone. That strong emotion seems to be in play when these ghost stories come about. A lot of them are dealing with unrequited love, which is a sad thing, but it is something that seems to be an emotion that's very chaotic, confusing, and also compelling to make people want to stay with that person so badly that they're not even willing to leave them in death.
Love or hate, they both work, don't they, Teresa?
Love and hate are probably the two most powerful emotions, and you hear a lot of ghost stories, stories of hauntings that revolve around something very tragic, something horrible, like, say, a prison, Mansfield Prison, a big one here in Ohio. There's a lot of anger and hate in that prison, and
yes,
there's also a lot of ghosts. So it's that emotion we feel is the bonding agent. So love is, in our opinion, even more powerful. So, of course, that love bond is going to be stronger. And I know it's a toss-up, but I think if you look for it, you can find the hate in a lot of stories. But if you look for the love, you'll see that that emotion is just as powerful, if not more powerful, which we believe it is more powerful than hate.
Teresa, I'm going to have you give us a love story, and then, Kathy, I'm going to have you give us a darker side story. But go ahead, Teresa. What would be one of your favorites?
One of my favorite love stories that is truly heartwarming and not even romantic, but just a story of true love, is some of the stories in our book are based on not just people, but people's special bond that they have with their pets. And we have a story, and this is one that your listeners might be very familiar with, and it is about a dog named Hachiko, and how he loved his master so much that after his master passed away, he continued his daily routine looking for his master. And this was a story that was made into movies, and there were books written about it. And Hachiko would meet his master at the train station every day after work. And one day his master died during work, so Hachiko went to the train station to meet him, and he never disembarked from the train. Well, the poor dog was unaware of his master's death and kept returning to that train station every day, waiting for his master. And he did this for 9 years.
9 years?
9 years.
Wow.
And no one could deter the dog. They tried to, people tried to take him home. They tried feeding him. They tried everything. And no matter what they did, the dog always managed to go back and return back to that spot and wait for his master. Now, if that isn't a sign of loyalty and love, I don't know what is. It's very sad, but of course the dog's spirit lives on at the train station, and it's known that even death could not keep those two apart. And that to me is true, complete, and pure love. I mean, the dog had nothing else to live for, it seemed, after his master died, and that's how strong that emotion is.
How long did the dog stay there at any given time?
The dog would stay there, the first couple times the dog stayed there for several hours. And almost overnight, I think, the first couple times. But then he would leave. I think the first few
times. On his own?
On his own, he would leave, but he would come back. He would go back to the residence where his master was, but when he realized the master wasn't there, he would go back to the train station. And it was almost like a timing thing. But he would stay for several hours. He would even sleep at the train station sometimes. They would set up a bed for him, and the manager of the train station would leave out food. So people took pity on him and took care of him, but where he disappeared to every day is sort of a mystery because he didn't have another home. He never went back to the residence after he realized that his master didn't live there anymore. And one person tried to adopt him, but he ran away. But they found him the next day at the train station at the same time.
What an incredible story. How about you, Kathy? How about a darker story?
Well, a darker story, one that takes place right here in Ohio, is the story of Celie Rose, and her legend is kind of a little more well-known probably here in the Heartland. Celie Rose lived in a place called Pleasantville in the 1880s with her family, and many people felt Celie was simple-minded, which would probably be a polite way to put it, but as Teresa and I researched the story, we wondered if she was simple-minded or brilliantly devious, because as time went on, Celie did grow into a young woman. She fell in love with a nearby neighbor, and this was a forbidden type of love, because Celie, again, was not the marrying type. She needed the care of her parents, and she was obsessively in love with the young boy next door. And after a period of time, the boy went to his dad and said, "I cannot handle this anymore. This girl is just following me and won't leave me alone. What am I going to do?" Dad went over and talked to her father, and they agreed that they would be kept apart from thence on. Well, Celie took this as the only thing standing between her and her true love was her family. So she plotted to murder them.
Oh, jeez.
And she actually poisoned her whole entire family, her mother, her father, and her brother.
That obsessed.
All died, and it was funny. During the trial, people were like, "Is she crazy, or is she just, you know, a criminal?" And she did go to a hospital for the criminally insane, where she did live out all of her years. But Celie Rose is a story that kind of lives on in legend because it happened near Malabar Farm, and many people know Malabar Farm. I don't know if you know, George. Do you know what Malabar Farm is?
I do not.
Okay, Malabar Farm has a wonderful romantic story because a very popular couple in the 1940s was married there. And a lot of people go to Malabar Farm because they know that Humphrey Bogart and
Lauren
Bacall were married at Malabar Farm here in Ohio. And it is like next door to Celie Rose's house.
That's a neat story.
It is a neat story.
And you two have compiled so many in the book Love Beyond the Grave, which captured my attention as you were putting it together. Where do people get the book, Teresa?
The book is available on Amazon. You can purchase it there. And ebook form and paperback, and it is also available at Barnes & Noble. And if your Barnes & Noble doesn't carry it, just ask for it, and they'll get it for you. So it's available everywhere. We'd like to see it popping up again now that our Valentine's Day is right around the corner.
Right around the corner. We're going to come back in a moment, of course, with the Haunted Housewives. That's the name of their website, by the way, which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's talk about historic haunted places. And then next hour, we'll take your phone calls with them. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Lots to talk with you about. Tim Banal's going to join us in a moment, our Coast to Coast editor, to give you some highlights of some of the incredible stories at the coasttocoastam.com website. And tonight we're announcing also in just a moment another new live show venue. It's going to be in Southern Florida. We'll get to that in a second. But Everett, Washington, of course, March 23rd. All of their tickets are available at coasttocoastam.com with the link. So just so you know that. Saturday, March 23rd at the Everett Theater, our live stage show. You heard Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. He's going to be one of the live guests there. We're going to have a meet and greet, a band. It's just going to be a great event. You can get the tickets by going to events at coasttocoastam.com or the highlight reel. You can do that for all these events or call this number for the Everett Theater in Everett, Washington, 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. Then, on May 11th, we're going to be in Columbus, Ohio for our live stage show. That will be at the Lincoln Theater. Looking forward to that. One of the special guests will be the Ghost Whisperer, Marianne Winkowski. She's going to be there. Maybe the Haunted Housewives will drop by and say hi to us. You never know. They live out that way. You never know. Saturday, May 11th, get those tickets to events or carousel reel at coasttocoastam.com. Now, the one we're just announcing, here we go. It's going to be July 27th at the Miramar Cultural Center in Florida. Miramar, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, everybody in the Southern Florida region, come on out. It's going to be Saturday, July 27th. At the Miramar Cultural Center. It is a huge venue, so we're going to just start with the tickets tonight. And everything the same, live band, meet and greet, a number of new guests there. So come on out, pick up your tickets at coasttocoastam.com. There is a phone number for you, though, for the Miramar Cultural Center. You're calling Ticketmaster at 800-745-3000, and then just look for and search for My Event on July 27th, 800-745-3000 in the Southern Florida area, Miramar, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, and the rest of that region. Now, of course, our editor at coasttocoastam.com is Tim Banal, who comes up with some incredible stories. And what do you have for us this week, Tim?
Hey, George, great talking to you. I got a couple of stories this week. You can almost call it a tale of two snowy mysteries, let's say. The first one, it's significant for today because 60 years ago tonight, pretty much right about now,
wow,
nine hikers in the Ural Mountains of Russia,
yes,
died under strange circumstances.
I love that story.
Yes, the Dyatlov Pass incident, and this is the 60th anniversary of this event. Now, to give you a little sort of behind-the-scenes look at how the sausage is made, if you will, I knew I was going to be, you know, commemorating this significant event today. So I wrote the article last night, or the guts of what you see on the website tonight in the number one slot. So I get up in the morning, and I'm getting ready to put this up on the website, and I'm like, well, let's just take a look and see if anyone else is going to be covering this. And I just about fell out of my chair, George, because there in the news is an announcement.
Yep, they're reopening the case.
Yes, from the Russian government that they're going to reopen the investigation into the Dyatlov Pass incident. And for folks, you know, to make this sort of crystal clear, folks, this is like akin to the United States government saying they're going to reopen the Amelia Earhart case.
Yes.
It's that big.
Yeah. The Kennedy assassination, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of the iconic mysteries of the 20th century. And so I really digged into the Russian media reports on this to get some details about what they're going to do. They're going to send investigators to the site in the Ural Mountains and do a full comprehensive study on where the event took place. They're going to, fascinating here, they're going to enlist psychologists to try and decipher how the hikers would have reacted to the various scenarios that people think might have happened when the Dyatlov incident occurred. So they're going to open 9 different individual investigations into these different hikers and sort of develop, like, you know, a forensic, you know, picture of who these people were. And they're also going to, you know, dig into the whole file that they have. They're even going to reenact the case aspects of it to see, you know, could they have slashed their way out of a tent this way? How would they have done this? How would they have done that? So, I mean, this is, I'm really, really excited.
It's a great story.
Yeah. It's really amazing. I never, you know, it's the coldest of cold cases. I never thought I would see this when I woke up this morning. So hopefully some new information will come out of this study down the line, and we'll be talking about it on Coast to Coast if and when we hear about that.
And Tim puts all this together in his feature called In Coast You Missed It. I love it. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with the Haunted Housewives, Teresa RG and Kathy Weber. Teresa, tell us some of the haunted haunts that you folks have looked at.
Well, we're very lucky to be in Northeast Ohio, and Ohio, we feel, is one of the most haunted states in the country. Of course, that's because we've done a lot of research into these places, and we've had the opportunities to go to them. But some of our favorite places are very local. Most of your listeners who are into the paranormal are probably familiar with Mansfield Prison.
Yep, I've been there. That's kind of creepy. That's where Al Capone was kept for a while, too.
Mansfield is where the Shawshank Redemption was filmed, so people who aren't familiar with it might know that. But it has had it's had over 100 years of history when it was in operation, and it closed in 1990. But the hauntings have continued, and that is, like you said, creepy. That is one of the darker places that we've been to, and that's about an hour and a half outside of the Cleveland area where we're from, and that's a place that Kathy and I are very familiar with. We've been there many times, and probably one of the more dangerous places that we've been to. But we're surrounded here in this area by local places that are haunted. One of our favorite ones is a little place called Greenwood Farms. And this is a place in Richmond Heights, not far from where we live. And it's kind of the opposite of Mansfield Prison, because Mansfield is huge and dark and full of all this negative dark spirits. And then we have this Greenwood Farm, which was a family-owned property that seems to be haunted by the family that lived there, the Pfeiffers. And it is definitely active paranormally, but it's a place where you can go to and not worry about being attacked or getting spiritual attachments. And the spirits seem friendly, and they want to talk, and they know that you're there just to help preserve their old home and that you're there to do some good. And you're not looking to put them on display or to make them do tricks. So those are the two polar opposites for me in our area, the Ohio State Reformatory and Greenwood Farm. And Greenwood is kind of coming up on the radar for the paranormal. We had a couple of movies filmed there, a movie called The Bye-Bye Man, which was a horror movie, came out a few years ago, that was filmed there. And it's starting to get on the radar of the paranormal and history buffs in our area. So I think that the more that people go there, we'll know more about it, and the money generated by the income that the paranormal brings in will help keep that place in operation for many years.
Kathy, why do these places stay haunted? Why don't these spirits just simply move on?
You know, that question keeps me up at night sometimes, because sometimes it doesn't make any sense, and sometimes it makes perfect sense. Sometimes Teresa and I have talked about, are we really talking to these historical characters that have factual information? They were born and died here. Is that who we're really talking to, or are we talking to a spirit from somewhere else that is disguising themselves?
Well, I was going to say, can you be tricked?
That's what we wonder about that sometimes. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, people act very like, oh, the paranormal, how cute, ghost hunting, how cute, you know, the Haunted Housewives, how cute. Really, you should be concerned about things like exactly what we're talking about. I sometimes wonder if we are being tricked, or, you know, who are we really talking to? When you go to a prison, as Teresa said, it seems like a lot of the activity is negative, or you go to an insane asylum, it seems very negative. And then you go to Greenwood Farms or other places, and it seems very positive. is it indicative of the history of the site, or is it just because those are the spirits that are hanging out there that night? We've even captured voices that people have said, yes, that sounds just like so-and-so who did live here and died. So you think that has to be real, but is it? I don't know who I'm really talking to. I could be talking to, you know, my own grandmother, for all I know.
And by the way, you two are tough. Even given the name the Haunted Housewives, you two aren't like Donna Reed. You don't walk around with an apron on and high heels doing your thing. I mean, you truly are tough investigators.
Now, we are known to wear aprons and high heels.
but we
are truly investigators, and we are trying to find out what is it, you know, we're seriously approaching what we're experiencing. I would say we're not looking at it scientifically, like many people claim, or we're not trying to gather factual evidence to present on your show so that you'll say, wow, ghosts are real.
And you don't bring a lot of equipment with you,
do
you?
We do not. We find that the most amount of interaction we get is using recorders. So many times, Teresa and I will show up with a recorder and a flashlight. But we do have all of the other equipment that many people admire, and, you know, like a FLIR camera and some of the more expensive pieces. But we do find that many times we just kind of fall back to going bare bones and old school and seeing what it is where we try to have that personal experience. And if you're with us, we try to have you find out what it is you're experiencing in your own personal life.
What does your significant other feel about all of this?
My significant other is fairly supportive. He does not jump in the car and go ghost hunting with us by any means. But at the same time, I mean, he'll do very, since it's going to be Valentine's Day, he'll do loving things. Like, we'll show up in Puerto Rico, and as we're checking into this hotel, he'll lean over towards me and whisper in my ear, you know this place is haunted.
Just to get you going, right?
How romantic is that, right? So, yeah, he does support me. It's a little different for Teresa.
Yeah, how about you, Teresa?
Now, I had to be very careful because my husband is listening tonight.
I bet he is. What's his name?
His name is Jay.
Hey, Jay.
And he's listening, and probably some of the people he works with are listening because he works overnight. He's a police officer, and
good for him.
He's on nights now.
Thank him, by the way, for what he does.
Yes, we thank all our first responders. Thank you very much, Jay, and everyone out there. But Jay is being a police officer, he's a little more skeptical, and you know, he likes to see the proof, and he wants facts, and he wants to witness it. So I'd say that over the years he's become a little more open-minded, but honestly, I thought he thought it was a little bit nuts when we first got married and I started doing this. But you know, he's had experiences that I think that he tries to rationalize as that couldn't possibly be paranormal. And for me, it's so common because I look for it and I seek it out. So it's very different. We're almost opposites when we, the way we approach the paranormal, the way we think about it, yet we do get along just fine. So it's a marriage made of heaven. The way I look at it is I don't know anything about motorcycles, and he loves motorcycles, and he doesn't know much about the ghost hunting, and he knows that that's my passion. So he is a big history buff, so we do share the love of history in that way.
I got a call from a police officer on the show one night, and we were just talking about open lines and ghosts, and he said that they had a run, he and his partner had a run to a house that could have been a heart attack victim. So they get to the door, they knock on the door, and a little old man opens the door. As he opens the door, they see the body of somebody lying down on his stomach and his face. They immediately call the ER, of course, which was on the way, but they get to the body and they flip him over. It's the guy who let them in.
Oh,
they turn around and he's gone, but it was the guy who let them in. The dead guy opened the door.
That's amazing. We've collected a lot of stories over the years that we've got from police officers about incredible experiences that they've had. And to get one to go on record and say something like that happened is amazing because, you know, it's their reputation is at stake. And some people will look at them like, you're a police officer and you're seeing ghosts. You must be crazy. So you never know how it's going to be perceived when they share these stories with you. So I think that's an incredible story. I haven't heard anything like that. But Kathy and I know several police officers that we've actually taken ghost hunting with us. And we watched them experience things. We had one experience. I had three police officers with me. One was a believer. One was not sure. He was kind of on the fence, a skeptic. And the other one totally didn't believe in ghosts, thought it was all a little nutty. By the end of the evening, all three of them were believers. And we took them to a little place called Willoughby Cole, which is kind of our headquarters.
Is this the place where the Twilight Zone had Willoughby?
Yes.
That's
yes,
what I thought.
Haunted Willoughby. Willoughby, Ohio, that's Kathy's hometown, and that is famous for being in an episode of The Twilight Zone.
Great episode, by the way.
Yes, wonderful.
One of the top ten.
Yep. It was, what was the name of the show? It was something.
Last Stop Willoughby.
Last Stop at Willoughby or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah. And it was, we were told by his widow that it is our Willoughby that he was referring to.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
He would take the train from Cincinnati into New York, and he would pass the Willoughby Depot. And as he stared out the window, he would always say, the place looks very idyllic. And that's why he featured it in that episode.
Rod Serling, one of the best when it comes to that. Is it dangerous, Kathy, to deal with the occult?
I believe it can be dangerous if people don't treat it with respect or have a little modicum of knowledge behind them before they start dabbling. I can see that it could be very dangerous. In fact, my granddaughter, who's 11, has asked several times if she could use the Ouija board, and I said, I'd rather you wait until you're, you know, a little older so you can understand better what it is we're doing when we're trying to communicate with the dead. So, but she's asked, and I thought, you know what, I'm willing to say it's too dangerous to be 11 and fooling around with it. It's not something to fool with. At the same time, so many young people are interested in it, so I don't want to scare them away from the idea of being a paranormal investigator, but I want them to be realistic that, yes, there are dangers. I have had an attachment. Teresa has had an attachment.
Jeez.
We have both had physical altercations at different places we've been that have left us with, you know, bloody scratches, or I was pushed down a couple of times. Different things like that have happened. Teresa's hair has been pulled. So it's not like there can't be a physical interaction of some sort, which can be dangerous. And just the fact that you're running around in the dark with unknown beings can be scary and can make something happen. We've read about ghost hunters who actually died, not because of a ghost, but because they were somewhere they probably shouldn't have been, and they had fallen, or one person, they fell through the floor where they didn't realize there was a weak spot. And so things like that do happen also. So, yes, there is an element of danger. Teresa and I, we try to, you know, really look into the site we're going to and understand what it is we're up against. But, man, we're always really excited when we're not going to a really dark, dirty place.
Yeah, well, we're going to come back and talk more about delving into the occult. Plus, we're going to take an hour of phone calls with both of you. The Haunted Housewives with us. The phone lines are open. Make the call.